Yesterday evening, the topic that I presented and we discussed was the impetus, of for surrender to Krishna, and the starting point and the concluding point was the mercy that comes from sadhus or the devotees of Krishna, because Krishna invests mercy in the distributors of his mercy, and when we get that association, it's an impetus to surrender. In fact, that's how we all began our devotional service. One can't begin devotional service without that association of those carrying bhakti, and it precipitates or facilitates or nourishes our further and further and further and further ongoing further surrender to Krishna. So the topic that I'd like to discuss this morning is, why is that? What is it about the sadhus whose association helps us get this impetus for surrender? And it's one of the glories of Krishna, and one of the glories of devotional service to Krishna is that Krishna reciprocates with his devotee. Krishna reciprocates with the non-devotee. He reciprocates with every living entity. But when one comes to the stage of full surrender to Krishna, then that person is a very important person to associate with, because through that person, Krishna's mercy will come. We were speaking about Rupa Goswami having received the fullness of Lord Chaitanya's munificence. That's a lot. So stay at the feet of Rupa Goswami. Great souls understand that. Those who wish to become recipients of Krishna's mercy understand that. So that's an impetus. And there's a reason why Krishna invests very special potency. Even we heard from Uddhava, sometimes Krishna gives himself. And that's the verse that we're going to be reciting this morning. This is from 9th Canto, Chapter 4. We're going to be inviting Trivida to chant some of those other verses too. But this is the first of them. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. This is Lord Vishnu speaking to Durvasa Muni about Lord Vishnu's position in relation to Ambarish Maharaj. So we're going to be hearing the story of Maharaj Ambarish. Just a little appreciation, first of all, is in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Ambarish Maharaj is held in a special category. There's a number of categories. He's in one of them. He's in the category of Shuddha Bhakta. He's the example given of Shuddha Bhakti, pure. And then one who's Shuddha Bhakta is reciprocated with in the way that we're just going to be hearing the description of now. So let us chant together. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Aham Bhakta Prabhadino. Yas Vantantra Iva Dvija. Sadhu bir grasta hridayo, bhaktair bhakta jana priyaha. One more time. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Aham bhakta praradino. Yasvan tantra eva dvija. Sadhuvir grasta hridayo. Bhaktair bhakta jana priyaha. And I'm going to read the translation rather than doing the word for word. Hopefully. Text 63. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. This is our Lord. He's he holds his devotee so dear to him that not only he sits in the core of their heart as he does with all living entities, but he makes his presence felt, and specifically his presence is felt in terms of the fullness of his independence is submitted fully to the discretion of his devotee, his pure devotee. There's a very nice description in the first chapter of Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that bhakti begins by the Madhyama Bhakta, who is given power of attorney by the Personality of Godhead to give him, to give Krishna to others. They have some rules that Madhyamas are supposed to be following, that is, they worship Krishna, they make friends with devotees, they give and exhibit compassion to the innocent, and they avoid the atheist non-devotee. So some power of discrimination is enjoined for the Madhyama, but to that person, and we've all encountered Madhyamas, otherwise we wouldn't be here, and we're here because Krishna gave that power of attorney to those Madhyamas to give Krishna. You can give Krishna, you can give me to who you like. Then when there's the Uttama Personality, it's a whole other picture. Here's Maharaj Ambarish. I have no independence. There's a wonderful section of Chaitanya Charitamrita where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says something very similar. He speaks of his appreciation for Vasudev Datta, we heard about yesterday. Vasudev Datta, the father of Mukunda Datta. Lord Chaitanya was saying to Vasudev Datta, although I went to school, I was very close friends and grew up with your son, Mukunda Datta. When I see you, it gives me more pleasure than seeing Mukunda Datta. Vasudev Datta was known for many things, but one of the primary things was he was so magnanimous, like Lord Chaitanya. He was magnanimous in all ways, including financially. He had sometime when you go to visit Navadvip, you go to one of the most wonderful places of the many wonderful places in Navadvip is Mamgachi. And the house of Vasudev Datta, the ruins are there. It was a huge mansion. He was extremely wealthy. But he was so magnanimous that he would give away all his wealth. So much so that Lord Chaitanya had to place Shivananda Sen in charge of his finances so he could at least maintain his family. Because whatever he had, he would give, and he would like give more than what he had. He was just that kind of kind-hearted person. So not just on the material finance side. He gave everything. He gave himself. Just as Lord Chaitanya then as a result said, I declare it boldly, and I'll say it again and again, I am Vasudev Dutt's man. I am his property. He can do with me whatever he likes. I say it again and again, and repeat it again and again. I am Vasudev Dutt's man. I am his property. He can do with me what he likes. Then he would say it again. As at least and once Lord Vishnu was saying about Maharaj Ambarish, or in a general sense, he's saying about his devotee who's given up. I'll just read it again. I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires. I sit only within the core of their hearts. If you remember from Friday morning, we were reading from Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, his commentary on the principle of surrender. And Jiva Goswami explained there's two categories of devotees. Of course, this is speaking now pure devotees. Akinchanatvam, those that have no material desire. That's described here. This is the position of Ambarish Maharaj. And then there's the Sharanagata Tvam, those persons that have an additional quality, and that is they actively are eagerly pursuing this mood of submission and service and furthering their submission through the rendering of devotional service, etc. Coming to the, we can say, the spontaneous, coming to the spontaneous stage of devotion. Now, Maharaj Ambarish is a pure devotee who is in this akinchanatvam. It's a nice comparison. He's a, his mood is a Vaikuntha mood. Residents of Vaikuntha are also pure devotees. But his particular mode of devotion, even he was a Krishna bhakta, it was in the Vaikuntha mood of Krishna or seeing Krishna in that way. So let us hear a little bit about the life of Maharaj Ambarish and his glories, and then we'll come again to these nice verses spoken by Lord Vishnu to Durvasa Muni. This is described in the ninth canto. Maharaj Ambarish was the ruler of the entire planet. He had a big kingdom. And his opulence, then Maharaj Yudhisthira said his opulence rivaled that of King Indra and the residents of heaven. Ambarish Maharaj's opulence surpassed that of the heavenly planets. He was a rich guy. But he, it said specifically, he didn't care for this opulence. Rather, he considered it no more significant than a pebble in the street. That's not very significant. Insignificant. Yet at the same time, he used it. Because he was a king, he used it for the administration of his kingdom. And an example that's given of the kind of rule that Maharaj Ambarish conducted in a desert area where the river Saraswati flows. My guess is it's somewhere in the Rajasthan area, but river Saraswati was in the northwest part of what's now India. There was a drought. So he engaged, very interesting. He's a Krishna Bhakta. He's a Vaishnav. He's a pure Vaishnav. But he engaged the Brahmanas that were qualified in yajnas that could produce rain, because according to Bhagavad Gita, yajna produces rain, which produces grains and so forth. So he engaged the Brahmanas, which requires an enormous amount of wealth, so he uses some of his treasury for that purpose, to help produce rain. But meanwhile, his business was worshipping his deity form of Krishna. This is a painting illustrating this. And this is instructive for those of us that think we have a busy life. He was more busy than any one of us or all of us combined in one sense, because he was the ruler of the whole planet. At the same time, he spent hours and hours and hours and hours of devotion before he went into the assembly hall and did his kingly duties. And because of that awesome power of spiritual force, that spiritual quality was distributed to his citizens. And because it was distributed to his citizens, it relieved them of so many struggles that come as a result of neglect of spiritual well-being in favor of being too busy. Maybe that resonates with some of the people here, because it's one of those, I could say, top five questions in the Swami circuit is, how do you balance? You know that one. How do you balance between your spiritual life and all of your duties? Well, Maharaj Ambarish set a very nice example. The spiritual well-being that he had went to all of his citizens, therefore, that, you know, the troubles diminished by that spiritual well-being. I remember a very exemplary act that Rabindra Swarup Prabhu did when he was GBC chairman one year. I don't remember what the particulars were, but there was, you know, a number of like major upheavals. Anyone that served in that capacity, you know, it knows. I served in that capacity once, and there's like this unpredictable, where it's going to come from, tsunami, nobody knows, and here comes one, and then here comes another, and then here comes another, and you're just recovering from one, and it's an incredible task. Because the spiritual well-being of the Vaishnava community is looking to the leadership of this person or group of persons that are entrusted to the responsibility of the spiritual well-being of our society. It's no small responsibility. I don't remember what the thing was, but Rabindra decided it's too overwhelming to... I don't see a practical direction, so he went to Vrindavan and chanted 64 rounds a day for the month of Kartik. As an exemplary act, I'm just indicating something like what Maharaj Ambarish did. So Dravidic, get ready with your sloka recitation. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo.
So, you want...
I'd like you to recite. There's a whole series of verses. It starts with this one.
Okay. So I don't have to look them up. We're going to be
here. Yeah, sure. Will you look them?
Are we going to chant responsibly?
No. You go.
Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo Vachansi Vaikunda Gonano Varnani Karohari Mandira Majanadi Su Shutim Chakara Chita Satkato Deye.
And you want to look up the other ones? Let's see which one it is. It's text 33 through 35.
But this one is not on the line.
Huh?
This one is not here.
Well, I didn't put it on.
Okay.
But your book, your little tablet has it.
So it's 9-4.
33 is on. Whoops, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. What's the verse number?
So it's the other two about him? Is that the other
two? It's 20.
9-4-20.
18 through 20. 18 through 20.
Okay. And we already did 18, so I'm going to do 19-20.
Yeah.
Mukundalingaliya darshane drisho tanvritya gatra sparshinga sangamam granam chatot parasaroda saurabhe shrimat tulasya vasanantarapite pada hare cheta badanu sarpane shiro rishikesha padabhi vandane kamam chadasi natu kama kamiya yatottama shlok janashaya ratihi.
Translation, Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. His words, in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temples, and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of Tulsi offered to the Lord. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord. His head in bowing down before the Lord, and all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. Indeed, Maharaj Ambarish never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service in various engagements related to the Lord. Final sentence. This is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and be completely freed from all material desires. That's the last line. Yato uttama shloka jana shraya ratihi ashraya ratihi jana ashraya ratihi. Prabhupada has given in his word for word, if one takes shelter of a devotee such as Prahlad, jana ashraya ratihi, by developing attachment to Krishna's devotee like Prahlad, one develops these qualities. And Prabhupada would quote, it's a nice some appreciation of how regular recitation of slokas works in Vaishnava life. By regular reciting certain verses, impressions are made. So when one hears even a few words, like our acharyas do this, they just speak a few words in their commentary, and Prabhupada followed the same. So he regularly would speak Savaimana Krishna Padaravindayo, and that meant the whole thing. Because you say the first thing, and you're just like, you enter into this arena of, like the shower of nectar. And then all the rest follows, but he would express specifically, devotional service begins by bringing the mind to Krishna. And from the mind, the other senses then are to be also engaged, but it's easier to engage all the senses if the mind is properly engaged. And conversely, if the mind isn't properly engaged, then the attraction for doing on a regular basis, you know, the regulations of bhakti, It's intermittent. But let's just say, you know, a pujari is performing arti, and they're ringing the bell and they're offering the incense, and their mind is in the gutter somewhere. They're not going to want to continue that activity. It's possible that your mind can be in the gutter when doing that exalted activity, etc. So one should be, the first principle, this is, I heard it so many times, when Prabhupada would reference, not just speaking on this pastime, but it was one of those common verses that he recited, the importance of engaging the mind in Krishna. Then immediately following that would be, and then all the senses. And we have a list of senses here. There's a good way to engage them. Second canto Bhagavatam describes the same thing, verse after verse after verse after verse. What is the use of eyes that do not see the form of the Lord? They're like the plumes on a peacock's feather, and like that. So what's the use of legs that don't go to the holy places? They're like tree trunks, and etc. What's the use of a tongue that doesn't sing the glories of the Lord? It's like the croaking of a frog that invites the snake to come and eat him. And there's lots of ways that the Bhagavatam is encouraging us to use our senses in service of Krishna, because that's what bhaj, the root word of bhakti, means, is practical activity. Senses over there is a sense object, and you engage the senses, and we discussed this. There's risk involved in extending your senses to sense objects, but there's protection from the Lord. The Lord gives his protection. Masuchaha. Masuchaha. Don't worry. You're protected. This is Rakshishatiti Vishvaso. You're protected. If the mood is the mood of surrender, and the mood of surrender exhibits itself in the form of service, just like Maharaj Ambarish. And Maharaj Ambarish was so involved in service like this that there's a verse 28 in this chapter that says, I'm directly quoting from the Bhagavatam, being very pleased by the unalloyed devotion of Maharaj Ambarish, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the king his disc. We can assume it's an expansion, he still had one. Which is fearful to enemies, and which always protects the devotee from enemies and adversaries, like Durvasa Muni. So by his side, this expansion of Sudarshan Chakra was ready to protect Maharaj Ambarish. So one of the things that Maharaj Ambarish wanted to do, what a great personality likes to do, is they like to give benefit to others. This is a saintly person. Their life is to engage in beneficial activity to others. So he didn't, you know, open a soup kitchen or a hospital or a something or other. He underwent austerity, a particular austerity. For every Ekadasi, a certain strong vrata for Ekadasi, for a whole year. And one of the places, the final, was in Vrindavan, literally, was in Vrindavan, because he's a Krishna Bhakta, so he went to Vrindavan. And he was engaged in this final day's Ekadasi vrata. The purpose of it was, there would be merit that would come to him, and that merit would then go to his citizens. He was just charitable like that. So he could have just given a bunch of stuff from his treasury. But more than just wealth, he wanted to give spiritual well-being to his citizens. That was his magnanimity. And so on the final Ekadasi day, on the Dwadasi morning, he had worshipped his Krishna deity, and time was approaching when it was time to break the Ekadasi fast, when lo and behold, Right into that assembly came Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni is a partial incarnation of Lord Shiva. And he has a reputation, as does Lord Shiva, but particularly Durvasa Muni. He can be easily pleased and easily angered. That's one of the names of Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. Easily pleased and easily angered. There's a very wonderful description of Durvasa Muni giving a benediction to Srimati Radharani, who doesn't need anybody's benediction. But the benediction he gave was that her cooking would be very special. So here's the little Durvasa Muni story. One time in Vrindavan, very young, maybe Satya's age, very young. She's paying attention, okay. Radharani and some of her friends were off in a field. And along came Durvasa Muni. And he approached the young girls and said, "I'm very hungry. Can you provide me something to eat?" And they said, "Sure, we'll go to our homes right now and we'll prepare something. We'll be right back." He said, "No, you don't understand. I'm very hungry and I want something right now." As in, right now. This is Durvasa Muni. You don't get Durvasa Muni angry. You please him. So the gopi said, "Well, Radharani is very expert. She'll prepare something right now. She'll just take some dust, mix it with some water, and give you nice biscuits." And Durvasa Muni said, "What? You expect me to eat dust and water and call it biscuit? No, but you don't understand. Radharani is, she's very gifted. It's really good. Try one. She just made some. Right now." So in disbelief, Durvasa Muni took one and bit into it, and it was delicious. And he ate the whole thing and ate the whole batch. And then he gave a benediction to Radharani, two things. All of your cooking, imagine those of you that do some cooking, nothing that you prepare will ever taste the same. Everything you make, it'll always be different and superlatively wonderful. And second benediction, anyone who eats your cooking, that will have long life and good health. He gave his benediction. So word spread fast. Radharani informed her mother, Kirtida, and Kirtida was a dear friend of Mother Yashoda. So Mother Yashoda and Kirtida said, "Guess what? Radharani got this benediction from Durvasa Muni." And Yashoda said, "Oh, can she come and cook for Krishna every day? Because if she cooks for Krishna every day, he'll live a long life and have good health and everything will be very nice. Because they're a little girl and Krishna's a little boy." And so from early, early age it started that Radharani would come every day and cook for Krishna. So that's a good Durvasa Muni story. Then there's some other ones that aren't so good. And this is one of them. Because when he came, Ambarish Maharaj was very happy. How auspicious! Because auspiciousness is created by the presence of qualified brahmanas, and Durvasa Muni, you're such a qualified brahmana. This will make all this austerity that I've been doing for the whole year superlative. I request you to break the fast first, because you're supposed to break the Ekadasi fast with Dwadasi prasad. So Durvasa Muni was very pleased. And he said, "Well, thank you. Yes, I'll accept that honor. But a brahmana before eating has to take his bath. And so I'll go to the Jamuna to take my bath. And I'll be right back. But you know, Durvasa Muni wasn't a Vaishnav. He was a yogi, and yogis commonly, they, when they chant their Gayatri Mantra and they're meditating on the impersonal Brahman, and that can take a long time. It took a long time. Durvasa Muni was off doing his morning thing. And meanwhile, the brahmanas who were guiding the king indicated, you know, there's a time when we're supposed to... Is Jitendriya here? One of Jitendriya's favorite activities. You all know who Jitendriya is. He brings Tulsi out in the morning. Jitendriya likes to remind us when on the Ekadasi fasting must be broken on Dwadasi day. Make sure everybody knows. Because it's important. You don't get the benefit of the Ekadasi Vrata if you don't break Ekadasi during the proper time. It's a very important rule for those that follow these rules. And the time was passing and Durvasa Muni hadn't come back. So Ambarish asked the Brahmanas what to do. And Brahmanas can be very clever. Well, we know a way that you can break the fast and not break the fast at the same time. What's that? Well, you performed your abhishek of your Krishna deity this morning. Take a little few drops in the palm of your hand of that abhishek water and sip it. And you're breaking the fast and not breaking the fast at the same time. So he followed what the Brahman has said. Meanwhile, Durvasa Muni is still in the river Jamuna, and he has this capacity to understand what's going on elsewhere. And he understood, Durvasa Muni understood that Ambarish Maharaj had broken the fast. So he came back Ashutosh, really angry. And really, the spirit of his anger was, he was jealous or envious. I'm a Brahmana. I'm this exalted Brahmana. But Maharaj Ambarish is honored more than me. So I'll get him. He came back and insulted Maharaj Ambarish, saying that you've insulted me because you asked me to break the fast first and then you broke the fast before I broke the fast. So what kind of qualified person are you? I curse you. I curse you that he took a bunch of hair from his head and dashed it to a ground with some mantra and created a fiery demon and pointed towards Maharaj Ambarish and said, get him. Durvasa Muni became angered. And then there's a very nice description I like so much. As you see, Maharaj Ambarish is standing there completely undisturbed. Specifically, it says, neither did his feet move, nor did his mind move. Now imagine, you're just like, you know, an ordinary devotee, and here comes this fiery thing racing at you. What are you going to do? Just stand there? I mean, just by reflex, you're going to put your hands up at least. You know, stop the thing. And your mind is going to do something too. Here comes this, death is approaching. Something's going to happen. And he's a kshatriya. He's not a wimp. He's a kshatriya. And kshatriya is when there's provocation, they immediately respond. That's the kshatriya's nature. But he was beyond that. He was a pure devotee. Not that we have to imitate what he did. If some danger is coming your way, you just stand there. But that's what Maharaj Ambarish did. He understood. His faculty said, I've offended a brahmana. Very similar to Maharaj Parikshit, I've offended a brahmana. And there's some reaction that's going to come. I accept whatever that reaction is. So when Maharaj Parikshit was informed that he was going to die, by the curse of the Brahmin's son. Same as Maharaj Ambarish, his mind didn't change. He just accepted it. This is the will of Krishna. I accept it. There's the bunch of hair, and there she is, this fiery demon. She just looks as fiery as this other one. And when the fiery demon approached Maharaj Ambarish, Shurshan Chakra, that was standing by the side of Maharaj Ambarish, stopped the fiery demon. Not only stopped the fiery demon, but severed this part of her body from the rest of her body, cut off her head. And then the Sudarshan Chakra aimed at Durvasa Muni and started pursuing Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni was a mystic yogi. He had mystic powers, and one of his mystic powers is he could travel at great speed. So he started traveling at great speed, and Sudarshan Chakra was pursuing him at great speed. In fact, his back was very hot because Sudarshan Chakra is very hot. And there's details and details. Everywhere he went, Sudarshan followed him. So he went to Lord Brahma, and then he went to Lord Shiva. And without the detail, both of them declined. They said different things, but essentially were servants of Vishnu. And the Sudarshan Chakra is the servant of Vishnu. We can't interfere with the will of Vishnu. If you want relief from Sudarshan Chakra, you have to go to Vishnu. It's his chakra. So Durvasa Muni made his way, fleeing from Sudarshan Chakra, and finally made it to the abode of Lord Vishnu. That this is very special, because only qualified people can go to that place. But Durvasa Muni wasn't an ordinary person. Somehow Lord Vishnu gave him access to his abode. And when he came before Lord Vishnu, there you see Sudarshan Chakra right behind him, he said many things. Among those many things, he honored Lord Vishnu. He acknowledged that he had made a big offense, a big mistake, because he hadn't properly understood the greatness of Maharaj Ambarish. In fact, he was envious of Maharaj Ambarish. So he apologized profusely for his offense to Maharaj Ambarish. And then he petitioned Lord Vishnu to give him relief from the Sudarshan Chakra. And then this verse that we just recited was the first verse that Lord Vishnu said. I'm sorry. The others had said, I'm sorry, we're servants of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu said, I'm sorry, I'm servant of Maharaj Ambarish. I have no independence. I can't do something independent of Maharaj Ambarish. I'm situated in his heart. And let us now go through some of the other verses that follow. Do you want to find the page?
Sixty-four,
sure, yeah.
Naham atmanam ashasi mad bhaktai sarubhir vina shriyam chatyanti kim brahman yesham gati raham para.
Translation: O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Pretty amazing. He's Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. I don't want to enjoy my self-satisfaction without the association of saintly persons. Next one.
Ye dara gara putrapta pranan vittam imam param Hitvamang sharanam yata katantang chaktum utsahe.
Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Now, this is not karma sannyas advocacy. Maharaj Ambarish is a householder. He has a wife. He has a palace. He didn't give up all those things. He's giving up the false sense of ownership of those things and dedicating them exclusively to Krishna service. In that way, no material desires. Even there's involvement with matter. Next.
Mahinir bandha vidya sara bhaksa madarshana vaseku vanti mam bhaktya satstriyak satpatinyata.
As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of the heart bring me under their full control. Next.
Matsevaya patitam te salokyari chatushtayam nechanti sevaya purna kutonyat kala viplutam.
My devotees who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, and Sharsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to higher planetary systems? Now, it's just a little elaboration. These four, there's five kinds of liberation. One is what Vaishnavas have no concern about whatsoever. They're repulsed by it. That's the merging, becoming one with the Supreme that we commonly hear people say, in the final analysis, it's all one. I'm tempted. I'll tell a little Jayadvaita Swami story. Maybe, Dravida, you've heard this. I've heard it about 15 times. Subal's heard it. He likes it. Jayadvaita Swami is Dravida's senior. They're both of them are editors, and Jayadvaita Swami is senior editor. So as much appreciation as you have for Dravida, you can elevate that by your regard for Jayadvaita Swami. He's a little, you know, has his temperament, but he's, you know, fantastic editor. So Jayadvaita Swami never completed high school. He found it useless. So he just went here and there, and he found Prabhupada and found that more than useful. He became, you know, very dedicated and attached to Prabhupada and serving Prabhupada. So he's described this story one time at 26 Second Avenue. There's a group of people that were coming, and that one of the people that was coming was, in Jayadvaita Maharaj's words, an Upper East Side follower of the Upper East Side yogis, the swamis and yogis. And she, I won't say it like Jayadvaita Maharaj, but she always had this smile pasted on her face like, you know, bliss, no matter what. So, hearing from Prabhupada, this one of, you know, she would just smile and smile and smile and smile. One time she asked a question, and the question was, Swamiji, isn't it true that in the final analysis, it's all one? Big smile. And Prabhupada immediately responded, it's all one. It's all one. Then why don't you put your food here? And the girl burst out crying, and Jayadvaita Maharaj was laughing and laughing. He loves that kind of repartee. I've heard him tell that story many times. It's all one. It's all one. Then he would say, Prabhupada would different comeback for it's all one. If it's all one, then give me all your money. This is not a teaching that you live by. You say it's all one. Or why are you wearing a shirt instead of a cotton ball if it's all one? It's all one. And so forth. It's all one. So there's that it's all one kind of liberation, Sayuja, that there's four kinds of Vaishnava liberations. And it's repeatedly, in different ways, expressed that a pure devotee does not care for these Vaishnava liberations. What it's clarified here, it's already offered to them, but they're not attracted to it. They're not pursuing it. What are they interested in? They're interested in the service of the Supreme Lord. So whatever may come, or not come, they're fine, as long as there's service to the Supreme Lord. It's not chasing liberation. Now that's for the position of a pure devotee that Lord Vishnu is describing. Now here's another one. We'll chant this one responsively. Very famous verse. So, Dravida, lead us.
Sadavaradayam mayam. Sadhu nam vidayam toham.
Madanyate na jananti.
Madanyante na janati.
Naham te bhyomanagapi.
Naham te bhyomanagapi.
Translation. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the core, in the heart of the pure devotee. That's the first line. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Pretty emphatic. So, this is the relationship of one who has come to the stage of full surrender, not just at the foothills of surrender, but they've, by mercy and by sincere effort combined, prayasa and kripa combined, they've come to the stage of full surrender. And when that full surrender is there, Lord Vishnu says, I'm in their heart and they're in my heart. They know nothing but me and I know nothing but them. So why is this sadhu sangha, back to yesterday evening, this is the connection. Why is it so important? Because those persons are carrying Krishna in their heart and Krishna is giving them the empowerment fully to give him to others. And they want to give him to others. That's what sadhus like to do. That's what Maharaj Ambarish wanted to do, and we'll see in just a moment. That's what Maharaj Ambarish wanted to do even after his life was threatened by Durvasa Muni. So, we're not going to read the rest of the verses, I'll describe. Lord Vishnu then says, tell you what, if you want to get relief from the Sudarshan Chakra, I know it's very hot, but you're going to have to go back to Maharaj Ambarish and place yourself at Maharaj Ambarish's feet and beg forgiveness from him. You offered your apology to me. It's him whom you have offended. And because you've offended him, I'm feeling like I'm feeling. I can't do anything. You get his sanction, his relief or release from that offense. Sudarshan will leave you alone, guaranteed. That's my recommendation. And so Durvasa Muni sped his way back to where Maharaj Ambarish was. It took a whole year to go and come back. Year of solar years. And, you know, Prabhupada also would refer to that. This the place where he went to is the abode of Lord Vishnu, that one planet within the vastness of this universe that's a spiritual planet where Lord Vishnu resides, and to go and come back took Durvasa Muni a whole year and no spacecraft is going to make it, period. So he returned and there's Sudarshan right behind him, and he The Brahmana fell at the king's feet and saying, I had the offense I made is because I was proud. I was envious. I didn't understand why people were giving such honor to you. Now I understand why people. Lord Vishnu explained it all. I understand your situation. And please forgive me for the offense that I have made. And oh, by the way, that Sudarshan Chakra right behind me, could you please ask him to cool it? Too hot. And so there's a whole chapter that follows, and if you're interested in understanding the subject of what is this Sudarshan Chakra anyway, Marj Ambarish explains what Sudarshan Chakra is anyways. Very fascinating. Very fascinating. And then he appeals to Sudarshan in the following manner. If I have done any kinds of auspicious activities or austerities that brings merit to me, I hereby at once gift all of that merit to this Durvasa Muni here so that he can be protected by my merit. So this word merit, it's kriti, and properly used merit is sukriti, and improperly used merit is duskriti. That's what demons do. They do us like Hiranyakashipu. He underwent austerity to get something that he could then use in a bad way. That's what demons do. They do austerities too, etc. So all was made very nice. He ends his prayer this way. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering obeisances unto you, that the you that he's referring to is Sudarshan. Again, making this connection from our earlier discussion of this word Namaha from Padma Purana means without false ego or ahankara. Ma, Padma Purana says, indicates ahankara, false ego, and na indicates abeyance or casting aside false ego. That means taking shelter of our true ego, which is the position of being the servant. That was Maharaj Ambarish's capacity. He very clearly understood whether he was the king, whether it was facing a fiery demon, whether it was appealing for Sudarshan to give relief to Maharaj Ambarish, whatever, and etc., whatever the various circumstances that life throws at us, Namaha. We act without false ego or ahankar in the mood of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sudarshan is expansion of him, or is his expansion. This is a image of a Sudarshan Shila. And you can tell by the circular picture here. And they just manifest this naturally. So some devotees I know, they're really expert at looking at a Shila and saying what kind of Shila it is. This is really obvious. It's a Sudarshan Shila. And so the power, the force of Sudarshan was withdrawn. And the story ends where Durvasa, because Ambarish, that whole year, he was very austere king. He fasted for the whole year. Then it was time to break fast, so the two took their prasad together, and all was nice again. Durvasa Muni appreciating the exalted association of Maharaj Ambarish, and Maharaj Ambarish appreciating the exalted association of Durvasa Muni. Not considering I'm greater, he's lesser, just being in a position of honoring him. This is the way of Vaishnava life. There's other examples of this, but back to the starting point. Why is sadhu sangha so important and throughout all the stages of spiritual life? Because sadhu is a person who is fully surrendered to Krishna, and Krishna gives himself to that person. Krishna empowers, protects, and empowers that person. If we have that association, we're very fortunate. And when having that association, our hearts are meant to become pure, if not pure, are meant to become pure. And one of the things we must very carefully guard against is offense, from whatever the root source of that offense, carrying some material conception about something that's not material. That's the root of offense. The root of offense. Because of an offensive nature, that which is actually spiritual is blocked by the clouds of anarthas that arise from offenses. So we need devotee association, and we need to very carefully guard against the offenses to devotees, but receive from those devotees and serve those devotees. And, you know, we're in the midst of so many devotees at different stages of our spiritual progress, but we shouldn't think lesser of this one, kind of thing. We should respect all devotees, because they're carrying Krishna in their heart and devotion for Krishna in their heart. And one moves forward with that spirit, then one can become elevated and protected by Krishna. So that's discussion for this morning. Any comments or questions from anyone? Yeah, that was quick. We turn the light on, Suval? Light?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for that nectar. Maharaj, just one point I was thinking. Maharaj Amrish didn't even move his feet or mind, as you were telling. It's so touching. And Durvasa Muni saw that right in front of him. Maharaj Amrish didn't move. But he was like running away, even after seeing. He had that association of such an exalted devotee.
Yeah.
How, and he had access to go to Lord Vishnu directly. So how he was not able to understand from Maharaj Amrish that devotion and why he was...
I said it, I'll say it again. The nature of... Here's what Jiva Goswami describes. It's not just in this life that, you know, once upon a time I made an offense, and then there's a reaction to that. It's something that one carries lifetime after lifetime. There's an accumulation. The very nature of our being in the material world is averse to Krishna. Raga dvesha samutena, dvesha, towards Krishna. So there's offensiveness towards Krishna that we're carrying in our heart. And that offensiveness, the result of offense is anarthas, unwanted things in the heart, and is compared poetically to clouds. Clouds that, for example, it's a cloudy day, and clouds are blocking the sun. There's many days when in these windows there's like blazing suns, so, you know, people have to move their place if they're sitting because the sun is so bright. But when the clouds are there, the sun doesn't come through. Same. When anarthas in the heart that have arisen from offense, one of the effects, according to Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha, is one can't properly see that which is spiritual. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing in Harinam Chintamani, there are four categories of not seeing properly that which is spiritual. The four are the Lord, like, you know, the form of the Lord, the the process of bhakti, the bhakti itself, the bhakta, and the living entity, the chit-kana, the living entity. So not seeing other living entities, like there's this tree in the room here, and a bunch of plants on the window. They're living entities also, etc. So not seeing that which is spiritual as spiritual is the result of being covered by, ignorance and offense. And the product of ignorance is these coverings, and product of offense is so we're covered. Then we continue to act in that way. Even something that's spiritual comes in front of us. We can't see it properly. So it magnifies the offense, because one just interacts in an improper way. Fortunately, however, Krishna is behind the whole scene, and Krishna brings benefit. Like, our congregational chanting of the holy name, meaning specifically going into the public and chanting the holy name. They don't know what it is. And there's an anarthas in the heart. So they may, think wrongly about what the chanting is. So it's namabhas for them. But that namabhas is very powerful. And if they somehow become attracted, somehow become engaged in further chanting, etc., then the benediction increases, the benefit increases. So that's the antidote. But the why one cannot see is because there's coverings. And even a very exalted person, not just a person on the street in Chicago, but a very elevated Mahayogi, can't see. So when there's envy in the heart, then you can't see. Yeah?
Maharaj, you said we should respect all devotees. So for me, I feel it's a very high stage, because when we are interacting closely with few devotees and then we get to see their faults more clearly than others, and then it's like you see faults more and less, that this is a devotee of Krishna and you should be respectful. So I don't know, it's difficult to see a devotee from the point of respect or in such a situation.
Huh? Well, I'm trying to process what I think I heard.
You want me to repeat?
Well, let me say back, then you just edit. As a practicing devotee, you or we, as practicing devotees, we're interacting with other devotees. And as we interact with other devotees, there's because of that closeness of interaction, we may see in those devotees more closely their faults than we did before, the shortcomings. Now, so the punchline of your question is where I'm unclear. It's like, how are we supposed to handle that, is your question?
In such relationships, it is difficult to maintain the respect.
It's difficult to maintain respect when you see their shortcomings or faults or whatever.
So,
doshas. Yeah?
How to be respectful even in those relationships?
Oh, really easy. You see the bhakti. Doesn't mean what you don't need to do is turn your power of discrimination into the off position. Just shut down. That's not what's required. See the bhakti that's within the heart of that devotee. Just like you, there's qualities and there's faults. And by associating with you closely, one comes to understand both the qualities and the faults. guna and dosha, the qualities and the faults. Now, aside from the qualities and faults, there's the soul, and there's the bhakti that the soul has towards Krishna. That's where the attention goes. And then you, towards those persons that are carrying bhakti in their heart, you're a servant of those persons who have qualities and faults. And how can you be of service to those persons who you want to serve? You fan the spark of their qualities and encourage and appreciate their qualities and how their qualities are engaged in Krishna's service. And as a well-wisher, what should you do about their faults? Well, you don't, you know, get into fault-finding. That's what you don't do. Yes, you continue. The respect goes to the bhakti that they're carrying. And you appreciate that and encourage the good qualities, and in whatever way that you can, depending upon the relationship and your capacity and so many variables, you may or may not say something, do something in relation to the fault. But as bhakti grows, the faith is, as the bhakti that's in their heart grows, that's going to burn the faults and replace the faults with qualities. Krishna will do that. So how to encourage the bhakti? Not being blind, nor being fault-finding. So you don't go way over on that side and just make yourself numb. You don't do that either. The mood of service. Humble mood of service and respect of the bhakti that they're carrying. Consider the ways that they're carrying bhakti. And manifesting that. Now there's certain lines that we may need to draw, where it's just like certain faults are not acceptable. And in your position, you know, you have an authority. You go to that authority and you share with your authority, I'm concerned about such and such. It's not my business to do anything about it, but I thought I would share this with you. And like that. Then you carry on with your position of respect if there's something that's crossing the line of fault. Okay? Dravida Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj. Very inspiring. I love the way you refer to the way Prabhupada would quote this line of the verse, and the whole thing would come out. And that set off a certain train of thought. And it reminded me of how you read about the Udipanas, you know, that the great devotees, they'll see Krishna's flute, or they'll see a footprint, you know, in Vrindavan. And the whole pastime, in other words, it will recall everything about Krishna. That calls to mind how, you know, because we're talking about accepting what's good and rejecting what's bad for devotional service, the first two principles of surrender. And how the more that you saturate yourself in Krishna Katha as far as possible and ignore everything else, then when something comes up, you know, one little word or a verse, like you talk about the verses, then the whole flood of memories will come up.
Yes.
Like, remember we used to do in Brooklyn, every day, every night, we read Krishna book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and because we're kind of in a closed system, imagine a world without cell phones and all of this. You know, it was like, I didn't read a newspaper for 2 years. I mean, I don't know about you. And so, that would be in your mind, and maybe not at the top of your mind, but then you'd hear a little word or a name, you know, and then a whole pastime would flood in. And this is the great value of the chastity of hearing and chanting, is that that becomes the background of your consciousness, and you're always ready to, like, remember, oh, this whole pastime of Devasamuni, it comes out, you know, and things like that. So that's the thoughts that came out from your...
Well, this, what you just said stirred a couple of things for me. Two things. One of them, hopefully the same thing will be happening with you as is happening with me, and that is immersion in this subject matter. You know, the thoughts are being filled with the subject matter, even when I'm standing there brushing my teeth. You know, the messages that we've been hearing and sharing, not just the ones that I've been saying, you know, hearing from some of you, particularly Dravida Prabhu, but, you know, others that are sharing, and the process of continual absorption, as you were saying, accepting and leaving out the other, it fills the mind. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo. It fills the mind with those subject matters. And then, you know, this is Sunday and it's all over, and so then you go back and, when's the next one? So continue as much as your circumstance permits. You know, we have busy lives, etc. But regularly, according to the instruction of the Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Regularly. Nityam literally means always. But Prabhupada gets really light and says regularly. Regularly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And then another, when you were saying, you know, every evening we would hear Krishna book, this is a little appreciation of the Dravida Prabhu and Prahladananda Swami's nature. Please don't, you know, be embarrassed. I remember one year we were on Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, and we had the first evening we ended up at the Jagannath Mandir, and we took rest at Jagannath Mandir, and to go to the next place, early morning before the sun had fully risen, we were to cross a branch of the Jalangi by boats, and there were three boats waiting, and the first boat crossed, and the second boat sank. And all the devotees got wet that were in that second boat. And it was cold in the morning. And so, you know, it was taking forever because there was now only one boat to cross. So Dravida and Prahladananda Swami cheered everybody up. Dravida recited an entire chapter of Krishna book in Sanskrit. And after he recited the verse in Sanskrit, Prahladananda Swami recited the verse in English from Krishna book. And everyone was like, wow, this is the best Bhagavatam class we ever heard. We completely forgot how we were soaked and cold and waiting and delayed. And so, you know, it was awesome, and it's just, you know, it's Dravida's. It's the consequence of taking the instruction to regularly hear to heart, and then something happens when you do that, and benefit goes to that person, and that person can then benefit others in ways that are unforgettable. Yeah.
One point. Recently I reread, you know, it was Damodar month, and I reread that chapter 9 of the 10th Canto, you know.
Yeah.
And near the beginning, it's a beautiful description of Mother Yashoda and how she's churning the butter. You know, there's the whole verse there. And in that purport, which I first read in 1977, when it came out, that book, that mm-hmm. last, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada says it says there that she's reciting, you know, in the verse, she's reciting Krishna's Leela. She's remembering his Leela by, you know, singing his pastimes, Krishna's little baby path. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, it appears that Mother Yashoda never wanted to forget Krishna's pastimes at any time. And so she had, someone poeticize them. And he says this is a common practice in those days, that you would either poeticize them yourself, something you never wanted to forget, or you'd have others do it. And those who want to always remember Krishna's pastime should follow Mother Yashoda's line. They should do that. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, this is one
my thing.
And this is one of the emphases for my writing my stuff, but more than is remembering, because we all already have it all in the Bhagavatam and in all of the books that have been coming out. The Rupa Goswami, they're just taking stuff from the 10th canto and expanding it, you know, in the beautiful ways, you know, out of their realization and their incredible Sanskrit skill. And so much of it is this exquisite poetry. It may be in Sanskrit, but if you take the trouble, you know, we've got the synonyms and everything, you can gradually pick it up. So anyone who wants to do that, maybe we'll have a little spontaneous little class in verse memorization while I'm here. I'm here through Monday.
On that note, I think we'll end.
I will.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.